What's going on, everybody? It is that time again. The Sooners Illustrated Podcast, episode 254 on this Tuesday, March 10th, 2026. Josh Calloway, Colin Kennedy with you on a Tuesday. A little switcheroo this week. Colin going to be with me today. Tom Green will join me on the show later in the week. We have Colin here because Oklahoma just went out and had one of the best recruiting weekends ever, not to be hyperbolic. We'll talk about it. A massive weekend for Oklahoma. Future Freaks weekend. Oklahoma got five new commits. We will talk about them all. We'll also spin it forward. What's next in 2027? And then, oh, by the way, we unofficially kicked off spring ball yesterday as well. As Brent Venables, Jim Nagy, new coaches, all the new players met with the media. We'll touch on some of the big takeaways from that as well on the back end. It is a packed Tuesday, Friday show. A lot to get to, and we'll do so on the program here today. But a reminder, before we get started, subscribe to Sooners Illustrated at oklahoma.247sports.com. Promo code SoonersPod60. That's 60% off a VIP membership for a year. The Sooners Illustrated, the entire 247 Sports Network. Take advantage of it. Tons of recruiting stuff has been there already. Softball, baseball, some hoops. Spring ball is about to start. Kind of already has. It's a perfect time to jump in and be with us every single day over at Sooners Illustrated. So be sure to take advantage of it. Use that promo code and subscribe to us over at oklahoma.247sports.com. All right, let's get into it. Colin, you were a busy man this weekend. Lots happening. We set the table last week. If you didn't see the Thursday show, we previewed Future Freaks weekend. Colin was very, you know, open about this is a big weekend, a lot of big name guys, and we kind of combed through. We hit, you know, some of the biggest ones, and we knew it could be very fruitful, but man, five commits is quite a sequence in a couple of days, obviously, and we'll hit them all. In particular, Colin was then able to get up here for the media day yesterday, so busy guy. Now he's back in DFW, just up and down, flying all over the place. First off, energy level, are we okay? Are we good to do this?
I'm pretty tired. I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, but this is one of my favorite times of the year. I was telling you a little bit and some other folks, like, I've been on the road now, I believe, for 3 weeks already. We've got three more weeks to go of me being on the road. I'm going to be hitting a couple of different camps out in the Southeast over the next few weekends. And in between, I mean, I'm going to Norman, and you and I are trading info on what we're hearing about spring practices, and we're getting that rolling. We got to talk to all these new guys, both players and staffers. It's one of my favorite times of the year. A lot of ball talk. Look, I'm a football guy. It's no secret. To kind of get that flavor back for me and many others out there, I enjoy it, and I'm looking forward to talking some ball today because we got a lot to talk about, man.
No doubt about it, a ton. It was a crazy good weekend for Oklahoma, Future Freaks weekend. And then, yeah, like I said, we tagged on the end of that with talking to Brent Venables, Jim Nagy, all three new assistant coaches yesterday, and every new player with the exception of Peyton Joseph, the Georgia Tech offensive lineman who just had a class conflict. We talked to every other guy, every other freshman who's enrolled, all the transfers. It was a lot, and we'll get into that stuff on the back end, but I want to get into the recruiting stuff first. A massive weekend. Five new commits. I see no better way to do this than to just hit each one. I'll just tee it up for you, and you can just take BP here and keep rolling through each guy. We'll just go chronological order. And it kind of works out because I probably want to talk about this guy first anyway. Jameson Roberts, they got their quarterback. He commits on Saturday. The Alabama product, he's a composite four-star. We've talked about Jameson a pretty good amount, you know, the last several months, however long it's been. You know, we've talked about it throughout this class. This class is awesome, right? It's ranked number one, all that stuff. They've knocked out of the park. They have 3 5-stars. But the crazy part was they didn't actually have a quarterback, which is so, you know, foreign to what we're used to. Usually you get the quarterback first, you kind of build it out from there. They got him now. Jameson Roberts in the boat this weekend. Colin, you talked about him obviously on Thursday going in, that this was one of your guys that obviously you were going to be keeping a close eye on. I don't know, and you can speak to it better than me, I don't know if it was totally expected that they would just get him on Saturday to jump in, but he did. They have their guy. And talk about the fit with Jameson Roberts and what it means for Oklahoma to lock him down now as opposed to, you know, this trickling out, you know, any further. The fact that they were able to lock down their QB this weekend is always going to be a big deal, and they did so, obviously, on Saturday.
Look, going into this weekend, the expectation, or at the very least the hopes behind the scenes, was that OU was going to be able to go get its guy at quarterback in 2027. Not only this weekend, getting him on campus at a time where so many other premier programs like Georgia and Florida and others were starting to press a little bit.
Right.
Not only trying to lock him up and making sure a guy OU has circled for quite a while officially joins the class, Oklahoma had a very real goal of getting their 2027 quarterback commit to actually commit in front of all of these other premier 2027 talents and building off of that momentum, right? And that's exactly what happened here. He was one of several who ended up getting in front of all these guys and committing, and it generated a little bit of energy in the room, as we continue to hear out of Future Freaks Weekend. But I find this to be a huge get individually, because if we can go back in time, as you'll remember, OU was all in on Peyton Houston, the four-star quarterback out of the state of Louisiana. That was their guy at the time. He ends up getting the LSU offer and making that pledge to the Tigers. And OU was very understanding. But once that happened, a lot of chatter then became, okay, well, who are they going to go after? And OU took its time. It really let the cards kind of fall where they might. And at the end of that, it became very real that Jamison Roberts was going to be the quarterback. They were not going to back off of until he made some sort of decision. That decision now goes in OU's favor. Jamison Roberts immediately becomes one of the faces of this class, a loaded class with a lot of big-time type faces in it, which is saying something. And then kind of building off of that too quickly, you know, we talk a lot about Jamison. We haven't talked a ton about him as a player. And, like, what is Oklahoma getting? Why are they recruiting him? I mean, Josh, this guy took over at a program like Saraland, which is a very good program in the state of Alabama. And he actually took over the reins at quarterback for KJ Lacy, the former four-star quarterback who actually signed with Texas last cycle. And so when you take over for a Power Four guy, the expectations levels are high. This dude's completed 72% of his passes over 16 career starts. Once he took over as a junior, as a starting quarterback, he went 13-1 as a starter. Dual threat ability, can throw it well, can run it well, and he's going to have not only a real opportunity in front of him his senior season. This is a guy that's still ascending, as we've seen. And here over the next few weeks, he's going to be going to the Elite 11 regional stuff. He's going to be going to Under Armour camp circuit stuff. And he's going to be providing a real opportunity for further evaluation after a junior season that put him on the radar of some of these programs. Oklahoma got him at a time where his stock was still kind of rising. And I think for the Sooners to do that over Future Freaks Weekend, it's huge, because you obviously want your quarterback. You want that quarterback to help you recruit the way that he did during Future Freaks Weekend. But at the same time, too, Jamison Roberts was getting a lot of eyeballs continuously on the recruiting trail, and Oklahoma got him locked up before others could kind of swoop in there.
Yeah, no, you mentioned it, you know, getting him as his stock was rising, you know, because we talked about it last week going into the weekend, how, you know, we're starting to pick up more SEC offers. And obviously the guy's right in the heart of SEC territory there in Alabama. You know, and I know Auburn was potentially a visit that was coming up, right? And obviously, yeah, Alabama always is, you know, in-state obviously as well. But it's just to go pull this kid, get in on him early, and get your QB in 27. Like you said, it felt like forever Peyton Houston was just kind of a, I don't want to say a foregone conclusion, but like that was their guy for so long. So to land on your feet and get this guy in is really nice, you know. So it just, this was their guy all along, and to get this done, you know, here this month, this weekend, is obviously a big deal. So good stuff for Ben Arbuckle and this class to get the QB spot figured out. The class always going to feel a little, as good as it was, it was going to feel a little incomplete until you have the QB in there. And now they do. And so Jamison Roberts commits. He was the first one. He got the ball rolling. You know, the ripple effect, who knows how many of these other guys would have committed if he didn't. Maybe it all plays out the exact same way. I don't know. I mean, the guys would have to tell you, obviously. But he got the ball rolling on what was a massive weekend. He was the first one. Wasn't too long after that they got the next one, which was Tyson Ross, the Kansas product offensive lineman You mentioned him going into the weekend. This is another one of the names that you noted that you were keeping a very close eye on. Tyson Ross in the boat. We have him as an interior guy. Do you envision him as a guard down the road? I mean, what just talk about where he fits in, why this happened. He feels very Bill Beatonbow-y, to go get from, up north in Kansas. Just seems to make sense to add into what's already a really good, obviously, offensive line crop that they have with Cooper Hacken, Caden Penny, the big headliners. But then you throw a guy like this in, along with Luke Wilson. Quite a group that Bill Beatonbow is putting together in 2027 right now.
Yeah, look, shade under 6'4", 285-ish pounds, going to be probably playing about 290, 290-plus whenever his senior campaign rolls around. And this is someone who comes from a defensive tackle background, was a defensive lineman coming up, then made the move to the offensive line before this past season as a junior. Mm-hmm. And it paid off. I mean, this is someone who I would probably tell you from like a length perspective, maybe falls into question as a defensive lineman, but he goes over to right tackle at Andover, Kansas, and immediately cements himself, especially in a run heavy offense, Josh, as kind of that road grader style frontliner.
Yeah.
And he's just scratching the surface of his potential as an offensive lineman. I think that when you watch him drive, down block, and do some of the things that he can do within his early skill set as an offensive lineman, just has that road grader mentality to him, looks to finish blocks, and he's going to be someone, obviously, that an offensive line coach like Bill Beatonbow is going to go after, because not only does he have some of the physicality and things like that that you look for, he, again, is still building habits as an offensive lineman, right? And we know Bill Beatonbow loves to bring in guys who have that baseline foundation that you look for in the position, but then can then be molded as an offensive lineman. And that's what he does. And so I think Tyson Ross, again, three-star guy that Oklahoma is going to be able to turn into this physical, mauling interior lineman. I think he's going to obviously be a guard, but that's what you want. You wanted to go and get another interior guy, having Cooper Hackett in the mix, Wilson, who you mentioned as well. It's just another quality addition to this really promising offensive line haul for OU in 2027. And Ross specifically is one where very interesting get. I'm very curious to see how they develop him as he is still developing as an offensive lineman.
Yeah, just hard not to be excited about offensive line. I mean, you pair all the young talent you have now with that, obviously, cycle in 25 with Fasusi and Foje and that group. And then you bring the guys in who we just met, or at least met as OU players the first time, and Best and Schmidt. And then you look at what they've done in 27. I mean, it's stockpiling talent. I mean, you need a lot of depth. OU's learned that the hard way the last couple of years. And they have so much talent coming in every year right now. It's like, you feel pretty good about the future and the direction of the offensive line play at Oklahoma. Bill Beatonbow doing a really, really good job right now. So, good stuff. Tyson Ross in the boat. I'm trying to decide if I want to ask you now, or I don't want to step on any toes for when we get into what's next. The Gus Corsair aspect, does this have does it help, hurt? I mean, could they still get both? How does that weigh? And I don't want to step on if you were going to get into that later, but.
No, I'll go ahead and tease it for what we'll talk about later, but I don't think it hurts at all. In fact, there might be some benefits to it as well. Okay. We'll discuss that more here in a second.
Absolutely. All right. Keep it moving. Third guy, Jalen Scott, four-star composite safety, also from the state of Alabama. You talked about it last week, the connection with Jameson Roberts certainly didn't hurt things. They are friends, obviously from the same state. And similarly to, we talk about that 27 class, as awesome as it is, didn't have a quarterback. It also didn't have a safety committed at the point that Jalen Scott did. He jumps in. This is a guy that we talked about, really good, really talented dude, 6 foot. He's a top 12-ish safety. We have a number 11 in the class right now. He's a top 120 player, period, for us at 24/7 Sports. Colin, this guy seems like a potential stud. And Brandon Hall has been as good as anyone at getting talent and developing it. The safety room has been a strength. It will continue to be this year, certainly with Peyton Bowen and that group that he has coming up this season especially. Seems like a great get all the way around with Jalen Scott. Talk about his addition and what you kind of feel like his future might look like down the road at Oklahoma when he gets here, you know, when he signs in December.
This has been one of my favorite prospects in the cycle for right. a long time. And I actually put something out about that on my Blue Sky account that I just simply do not use. But back then, this was 6 to 7 months ago, I put out there early personal scouting crush in the 27 cycle is Jalen Scott, three-phase playmaker, and what I noted as well, unbelievably controlled aggression. What I love about Jalen Scott and why I think he's such a perfect fit for Oklahoma, this is an extremely violent defensive back. He is violent, but at the same time, when you're looking at some of these DBs that have that style to them, you want to figure out whether or not that violence is intentional and calculated or if it's reckless. I think Jalen Scott is one of the best DBs in 27 in terms of bringing that edge, that physicality to the table as a defensive back, but at the same time, not letting it overtake your playing style and ability sure. as a football player, especially in relation to your responsibilities, right? I think that's a big reason why Oklahoma was so invested in pursuing this guy whenever OU chose to offer. Talk to some folks who would be in the know. And if you'll remember, Josh, at the time, he was committed to Auburn whenever OU offered. And not only was he committed to Auburn, that's he right. had flipped to the Tigers after being previously committed to Florida State. So he had already kind of made a bit of a leap of faith in his sure. recruiting process. And at the time, it was like, okay, well, is he going to make another major decision that would alter his process? It was up for debate, but Oklahoma was willing to take the risk and pursue, and he gets to Norman for the first time ever for that Michigan game. And I think from the moment that he got on campus in Norman, he quickly realized, like, oh, this might be a place that I want to be at. I mean, again, he put out the pictures of fans finding him and tracking him down in the stands and taking pictures with him. I think that it helps, too, that his family was blown away by the experience. And from there, like, Oklahoma was a rocket ship taking off in Jalen Scott's recruiting process. He was committed to Auburn for a while still, eventually decommitted from the Tigers and backed off, reopened things, evaluated a ton of SEC powers, and even got what he called a dream offer from LSU. But even still, OU was consistent. They were persistent. It paid off, and it obviously helps too, like you mentioned, that Jamison Roberts, a close right. personal friend of his, was also heavily considering Oklahoma. It pays off, man. Again, they get a violent, really fun watch on tape at defensive back in Jalen Scott. And this to me is the kind of SEC defensive back the Sooners will constantly be looking for to add into the program. He's going to be a tone setter for them.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for a good safety. It's one of my favorite positions. And he looks like he fits the part. He just does all the way around. The size, like you said, the physicality and just – I love it. I love it. And, you know, it sounds like maybe, I mean, we'll see how this all shakes out. Could be a potential cheetah candidate, right? I mean, I would think maybe. With his build, you know, we'll see how that shakes out, right? But fun player and a fun get and a good one at a position of need. Again, they didn't have a safety yet in 27, and they get one now, and they get a really good one in Jalen Scott. So that was commit number three. Later in the night, they still were not done on Saturday. There still was one more, and it was one of the bigger fish of all of them as far as this weekend. Seneca Driver. This we see a big fella, Jason Witten. What a start for Jason Witten. His first really big recruiting win, obviously you can say, since he's been here at Oklahoma. Four-star tight end for us, top 60-ish player in the class, period, top three tight end in the class. They pull him from the state of Kentucky. Kentucky thought they basically had this guy. Some of the quotes coming out of Kentucky has been, it kind of just goes to show you that they were a little dumbfounded, frankly, if they let this one get away in state there, the Wildcats. Colin, talk about this. How did this happen? Because this is just an elite tight end prospect that they got into town, and Jason Witten got done. I mean, what a get right at the beginning of his tenure here to get a guy like this. The hype train was already really high for Jason Witten because of the name and what they did in the portal, but I think it got even bigger this weekend because Witten got one of the best tight ends in the country. That is his first high school commit. Quite a get here for Oklahoma with Seneca Driver.
So whenever Oklahoma chose to pursue Seneca Driver, it became very apparent that this was going to be the tight end that the Sooners were going to put the chips to the center of the table on. Like, OU was all in on going after this guy, and it's clear that from the front office to the coaching staff, everyone in the building in Norman believed Seneca Driver was not just the top tight end target for them in 2027. I believe that this was one of, like, the most important targets in the building for them across the program, and it was reflected. I mean, I think you have to give a ton of credit to offensive coordinator Ben Arbuckle, who went out there to Kentucky to go visit with Seneca Driver frequently. And then you go from there, and as Ben Arbuckle is chipping away, Oklahoma's front office is recruiting Seneca Driver heavily. Like, a lot of people in the program were in on this guy. Even though the national narrative, like, if you weren't me and some other folks who were covering it from an Oklahoma perspective, sure, there are a lot of people out there nationally who just did not necessarily see Seneca Driver landing at Oklahoma. Kentucky, especially once former Oregon offensive coordinator Will Stein took the job after helping Oregon get to the playoff and everything that he accomplished there with the Ducks, he goes to Kentucky. He is a state of Kentucky native, if I remember correctly, and Stein's staff was seen as the heavy front runner for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sneaky contender behind the scenes too was Notre Dame. Notre Dame was very much in on this guy, and we know Notre Dame's track record at tight end.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Driver has family ties to Notre Dame. So the Irish, like several people I talked to, were like, hey man, keep an eye on ND because they could shake this thing up in a hurry whenever stuff starts opening up. All that in mind, though, like, I mean, Oklahoma just didn't care. Like, I'm not sure that they cared.
Right.
And when it got finalized, he was going to show up in Norman over the weekend. I think a lot of folks at OU were saying, look, not necessarily in the idea that we're not letting this guy leave without him being committed to the program, but we're going to make it really hard for him to say no to us. And
right,
I think that's where you really bring in Jason Witten, right? Because Oklahoma had been pursuing Seneca Driver before Witten took the job.
Sure.
I do think, though, that Witten being there and being that primary recruiter and working with Arbuckle and others to go after a tight end of this caliber, it's Witten's past that looms large. I mean, very few tight ends coaches can match what someone like a Jason Witten brings to the table. For so many reasons like that and others, Driver gets to Oklahoma, and man, I still remember as the weekend's playing out, being on the phone with several different people, and I was telling some folks, like, hey, this really might happen, and Oklahoma gets it figured out. This is a huge get for them, especially at a position that has been heavily discussed, if you will, over the last few cycles.
No, massive. I mean, 6'6", 235. Mm-hmm. I'm in. He's a big dude and a top prospect. And, man, it's hard to not look at this class. We talked about, you know, obviously what they've done on the offensive line. And you get Jameson Roberts in. Now you have this top-end, elite tight-end talent to go with. Obviously, you know, Stokes and Keldred Bennett running back. And then everything they've done at wide receiver already in that class. It's it's quite a group offensively in 27. I mean, you don't end up ranked number one right now like they are without having good players on both sides of the ball, but offensively, it's impressive for Ben Arbuckle right now. And this is kind of – do you consider this his first full cycle? I mean, 26, you know, I don't know if you would – I mean, he was here in December last year, but however you view that, he's crushing it in 27. And obviously the staff goes into it as well. It's not just Ben by any means, but it's impressive. It's really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I got to give a ton of credit to Ben. Obviously what he pulled off with – Bo Bentley and a few others in 26 taking that risk. But now here in 27 to go and get Jameson Roberts to follow that up and then help the way that he did with someone like a Seneca Driver alongside Jason Witten, it's huge. And you're seeing a younger offensive coordinator kind of make his mark at a premier program on the recruiting trail. And this is what I was going to say, too, about Seneca Driver that I love. Like you mentioned, he's 6'6", 235 pounds, huge body. But like when you're talking tight ends and you're talking number one comes from a family of football players and number two is a basketball guy as well, like a legit multi-sport basketball type of tight end. How many good tight ends played hoops? The list is lengthy. They're getting a huge body, but I also think a big thing for Oklahoma was the family tree and some of the familiarity with the sport. And this is a really good athlete, man. Like, this is a really, really good athlete. And I give Oklahoma a lot of credit for saying we believe in this guy. We want him in the program. And despite whatever everyone else is saying, we're going to chip away at this recruitment. It's quite the get.
Sick name, too. Just getting that out there. That's a sick name. Seneca Driver.
Great tight end name. You know what I mean? That's a great tight end.
I can picture that. Yeah, playing 12 years in the NFL for sure. Awesome get. Very splashy addition there on Saturday night. One more to get to. It was on Sunday. Fun one. From all these kind of SEC area guys to an in-state one on Sunday with Graydon Howell from Broken Bow. He is a quarterback at Broken Bow. That's obviously going to be question one, Colin, is where you think he projects at Oklahoma, but then also just – how this came together. I mean, Graydon, I mean, the book on him, obviously, I think most fans know, but if you aren't familiar, is that he's just an unbelievable athlete, right? I mean, he's listed as an athlete, obviously, for us at 24/7 Sports, but multi-sport star, right? Does everything out there, Broken Bow. He's just a monster at everything. How did this happen? How did this come together? And then, the obvious question is, what do you think his future at Oklahoma looks like? Is there really a plan? Or is it more just like, let's get him here, and then we'll figure it out later. We can have somewhere to play this guy. I mean, he's just a good enough football player. You get him on the field somewhere. But this is a fun one. In-state from Broken Bow. I think this one gets people fired up.
Arguably the most intriguing pure athlete in the state of Oklahoma coming from Broken Bow. And Graydon Howell's rise is largely fueled by the fact that he can just kind of do whatever the hell he wants. Right, like four-sport athlete. He's playing football, basketball, baseball, track for the football team. He's quarterback, safety. He had offers from the FBS to even the Power Four level to play quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and safety. Again, just whatever he wants to do, he can kind of excel at it. So Oklahoma offers him. And obviously, anytime an in-state guy gets the OU offer, the Sooners have to be pretty convicted, knowing that you should probably be prepared to take this guy if and when you do search for someone within those state lines. And I think that once Oklahoma made the decision to offer, I know that conversation went really well with Emmett Jones. OU pitched him on playing receiver. And they're going to specifically look to kind of play him as a slot guy, move him around a little bit within this offense. You know, again, we talk about positionless football and the rise of that trend at times in the sport. Graydon Howell could give OU a little bit of everything. And I think that the Sooners are willing to lean into that. And through that, Oklahoma won this recruitment over by giving Graydon Howell the opportunity to go to a place that will aim to highlight his talents. And I think he really connected with Emmett Jones as a wide receivers coach. And especially, I think that's important because Graydon Howell had to figure out what he was going to play in college with so many different options. He had to identify mm-hmm. what he believed to be the best path for him. Emmett Jones, Ben Arbuckle, so many others sold him on the vision that they had for him at OU and the chance to stay home, play for one of the premier programs nearby. Difficult to turn down. And the last thing I'll say, too, it speaks to the way that this thing went. Graydon Howell did not necessarily go into this weekend as an expected commit. I had spoken to him repeatedly, several others, and Graydon's mentality going into the visit was, I might want to lean into the experience and the process, evaluate other programs. And his thought process, too, that he said both on and off the record was, if there's a spot out there that's going to let me play quarterback still, I might want to bet on myself and go do that. And to shift that mentality or approach the way that OU did, really impressive way to kind of close out the weekend of lands. I'm a big fan of Graydon Howell, too. He fits what OU wants to do on and off the field.
The best way I describe this, the hilarity of how what an athlete he is at the high school level, and obviously there's a lot of belief that'll translate to the college level. He's at Norman Future Freaks weekend, commits on Sunday. Brokenbow had a baseball game on Monday, 2-for-4 with a homer. Mm-hmm. and I believe there is a thought that he could play baseball at OU. I mean, I don't know if that's a for sure thing, but I believe that's at least a thought. We'll see if that happens. It's really hard. We've talked about it forever. Lots of guys come to OU and they try to play both and they end up focusing on one. Also, the guys who actually do both is extremely rare, but this might be a guy who could do it. You know, he's one of those special types. So, yeah, great. Awesome. And I love in-state. I mean, we love in-state guys. Obviously, last year just had the one with Oak Fuluese. Nice to get another one here in the 27 with Graydon Howell. So, fun. Fun to get in-state guy and just a great athlete. And so it's like you get them, you figure it out later. Fun get there on Sunday.
The Sooners Illustrated Podcast. We'll be back after this short break.
All right. So just overall thoughts on this weekend, and we'll kind of do a little bit of a what's next, but I want to just give you a chance to kind of put a bow on all of it as far as Future Freaks weekend. I mean, five commits. A lot of it was a lot of, you know, fans were throwing it. I joked about it off the top, you know, like best recruiting weekend of all time. I mean, a lot of that will be determined in time if all five of these guys go to OU and are awesome, right? Jameson Roberts is starting quarterback and they win the SEC and, you know, Seneca Driver wins a Mackey. Like, obviously, these are things that will be played out over time, but it did feel like as it was happening, it felt like we were witnessing something seismic, like, whoa, this is not normal to get five guys in one weekend that are all high level too, especially. Talk about, I mean, you can put it into context better than anyone, just what the weekend was and to go make the progress and get five commits. Quite a weekend for Brent Venables, Jim Nagy, this recruiting staff. It just pretty good stuff, I would say.
Yeah, I think that when you think back over the years, there have been some huge Champu barbecues in Norman.
Yeah.
There have been some really big game weekends. And especially if you want to talk about from a commit perspective, those types of environments will loom large. But man, from like a junior day spring visit, unofficial structure type of atmosphere, I'm not sure there has been a more productive spring weekend in mm-hmm. Oklahoma's recent memory. I mean, it's obviously one thing to get five commits, and there could be more here very soon because of the weekend, which is important to add context. So you might be getting even more because of this. But the caliber of player that you got, right, and the premium positions too, out of the weekend to get your quarterback, to get a tight end of that talent level, to shut it down a little bit early, to get the DB and a receipt. And like, I think you not only got a lot of dominoes to fall, but you got some really big dominoes to fall all at once too. And it sent shockwaves through the recruiting cycle. It really did. I think it turned a lot of people's eyes and the attention to Norman. And I think that speaks volumes. And some other quick takeaways for me are, like, number one, Oklahoma was really starting to win in some key areas in the Southeast as it establishes itself more as a member of this conference. I mean, we have seen that Oklahoma wants to recruit the states of Georgia and the state of Alabama heavily. I mean, you've seen OU really press in the state of Alabama through the likes of a Todd Bates, who's very familiar with the state, to now a Jim Nagy, who spent however many years in Mobile. And
sure,
you're seeing Oklahoma continuing to win, for lack of a better term, in the state of Alabama. And I don't see that slowing down anytime soon. Obviously, it points to, as well, Jason Witten and what he could accomplish to get the Seneca Driver stuff done the way that he did.
Sure.
I also love the fact that this class, it's 19 guys, and it's very nearly split down the middle, offensive to defensive side of the ball. Like, very close margin in terms of the number of bodies that they've added on either side. And I think the last takeaway for me, and curious to hear any of yours, or if you just want to expand on this topic, like, everyone's talking about this being the number one class in 27 cycle and whether or not something like that is going to hold up long term. And this would be my reaction to that, or my response to that. I don't really care. I just don't know that I care, because, yes, it is very early in the process. They have the number one class in the cycle at a time where very few other programs even hold double-digit commits, let alone near 20. But I think that this being the number one class right now speaks to the process and the operation that Oklahoma has built with this coaching staff and front office. They've come together and made it to where they're going to land guys early because they're that dialed into who they want, why they want them, which I think is a big reason why so many spots are filled early.
Yeah.
And getting it done. And then, by the way, like, I don't know that I care, because if they don't finish number one, whatever. But that to me speaks more to, again, just the caliber of prospect they're getting to commit to them this quickly. Like, you don't get number one for nothing. And so it's a heck of a group. And I think that for a lot of the social media noise that maybe OU fans are seeing externally, or the program, what have you, I just think, again, this weekend and this class in general is a testament to where Oklahoma's program is operating right now.
Yeah, no, it's hard not to feel really excited about just the future and the way this whole thing is moving, for sure. I mean, you come off a great season, you go to the playoff. Everyone's always believed in Brent Venables' ability to recruit players. It just was, you got to be able to win, though, to keep it kind of all going on the tracks. You're looping what they've done with Jim Nagy and his staff. It's exciting, and it does feel like that they're another good season away if they can, you know, put it together another good year, maybe get back to the playoff again, from this thing really starting to roll. And it kind of is rolling, but, you know, to really get it to roll, like you said, you don't get number one by accident. It is early, but it's also March. It's not like it's super early. I mean, it's late enough that you can feel good about it. You got 19 commits. It's a big number, obviously. This class is already bigger than the last one, and you got 8 months to go, you know, or 9 months to go. So it's exciting. It's really cool, and yeah, just hard not to feel really just encouraged by the way it's moving. Like you said, if they don't hold on to number one, it's not like that's, I mean, a huge deal. It'd be cool just for, like, the PR of it to say you got number one. But, I mean, you got 3 5-stars right now, a bunch of 4-stars, a slew of high 3-stars. You could become 4-stars. I mean, it's a really good class, and there's more to be done, which we'll get into in a second. But it's cool. It's exciting. Exciting stuff. Let's go ahead and do that. What is next, if anything, for you?
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of teased it a little bit as far as, like, this weekend could still reap some benefits. So both in the short term and the long term, as far as what's still there in 27, like I said, it is 19 commits. That is a lot. I mean, there is more. I mean, we've seen OU take, you know, in the 20s before. It's not like that's insane by any means. But what are you still viewing as, for both in terms of specifics, again, in the short term, like, I'm still watching these guys, or however you want to take that, but also big picture in terms of what you think Oklahoma would still maybe look to accomplish between now and December. And look, the reality is too that there's a lot of time. Odds are one or two of these guys will decommit or something. I mean, that's just how this usually tends to go. But right now, with, you know, 9 months until signing day, what's left for Oklahoma? What's next in 27?
I think first big thing, you got to start with Gabe Osborne Jr. Top 25 overall recruit in the country, according to 24/7 Sports. Our network is a huge believer in this guy. He's already hovering in that five-star territory. And, I mean, if Oklahoma were to get Gabe Osborne, OU would have three prospects inside the top 50 nationally, all from just the state of Oklahoma. Think about how crazy that is for a second in regards to a state that at times has been viewed as maybe a lesser talent area. OU knew that 2027 was going to be one of the best cycles in recruiting the state had seen in a while. They've gotten some of those big names in the boat already. Gabe Osborne is kind of the major one left out there.
Yeah.
And he did make it into town this past weekend. You know, he's still playing in the high school playoffs on the basketball side. Played in the quarterfinals, if I remember correctly, on Friday night. And then showed up on Saturday and went through some visit stuff. And this was huge experience as far as just continuing to reiterate to Gabe Osborne how much of a priority he is for Oklahoma and its class. And I think that OU continues to have the driver's seat here at a time where so many other premier programs, Miami, Georgia, Alabama, Texas, and so on, want this guy to leave. And so I think I'll lead off with that. Gabe Osborne getting around Norman this past weekend again was huge. Something that I'm continuing to monitor as he goes through the high school basketball playoff stuff is how does that shape what he wants to do? But I think OU is really optimistic here, Josh. And for several reasons, Oklahoma's continuing to keep a close eye on this guy.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's, you know, massive athlete right down the road. You know, we've talked about a lot. You know, you see, I feel like I see someone post a basketball highlight of him every couple of days. I mean, he's just one of those dudes, you know. Mustang, you know, they are in the state tournament, like you said. They play, coincidentally, at the Lloyd Noble Center tomorrow in the state tournament. Quarterfinal, I think, tomorrow. So they won an area last weekend. So, yeah, he's chasing a gold ball in hoops while being an elite, potentially five-star corner. Just one of those guys that's just a little different.
Moving forward from that, you brought it up a little bit, so let's go ahead and address it. Gus Corsair.
Yeah, I think he's another name, yeah.
So to what you asked me earlier, let's start here. Tyson Ross committing, that makes it four offensive linemen already. Is that a negative for OU and its pursuit of Gus Corsair? I view it as a positive because, number one, Gus and Tyson know each other. They're from around the same area, and so there's familiarity there. But the other part of this, too, is when you look at Oklahoma's class right now, you've got essentially two tackles, two guards. OU views Corsair as its future at center. And they have continued to sell Gus on playing center for them if and when he were to commit to the program. Now, there's a Kansas State in there. There's an Oregon in there. There's a Missouri in there. There's several others, obviously, that want a four-star lineman of his caliber. But I think Oklahoma continues to be at the top of this process for Gus. And this visit weekend did not change that. We'll see what happens next here. Mm-hmm. I think that Gus has viewed April as the month he would like to potentially make a decision. But at the same time, he started to book official visits, and he's mentioned that maybe he takes his process into the summer. We'll see. At current time of recording, you know, about 2 o'clock on this Tuesday, no official word. But when I caught up with him after the visit weekend, seemed like he was at the very least willing to keep taking some of those other spring trips
Sure.
he had already started. So this one will be one for me that let's see how this goes in April, but I think Oklahoma is the outright front runner. And I don't know that at this time, at the very least, it's particularly close.
I mean, it's obviously the offensive line group is already great. So you throw a guy like that in and just the kind of, I don't know, novelty of it, but the fact that you would have two tackles, two guards, and a guy that they project as a center. I mean, you literally have a starting five right there if you could do it. So that's like how you draw it up. Yeah, definitely a big name that we've been talking about for a long while on this show that we'll be watching closely. Anything else in 27 that you wanted to make sure to hit today?
I'll go ahead and wrap it up because I know we've talked a whole bunch of recruiting stuff. But sure. I want to say this, and I forgot to mention it in my takeaways, and I'm kicking myself. But building off of the Corsair thing, one other big thing that I think is important to mention, another primary takeaway for me, and it relates to Gus and others, is that Oklahoma's in-house players are recruiting at an elite level right now. I mean, right. Brent even talked about it during his spring media day appearance,
which we'll get into. Yeah.
So tying the two together, like, I thought it was really cool, and I think it, again, when you talk about Gus and Tyson, some of these other guys, and the way that OU's commits are recruiting some of these guys, I mean – Gus and Tyson and the other recruits went out for a meal with not just Bill Beanbo, like Michael Fasusi and Ryan Foje took time out of their day to go eat with all these guys and pitch playing with them at OU. And Brent talked about too, like a ton of not just current players, but former players as well showed up and were helping the staff recruit these guys. And I think that's another big thing for Gus and some of these other recruits that we're talking about,
sure,
the fact that they heard plenty from players who are already in the program. Like, that stuff matters to a lot of these guys. You hear it constantly. I want to go on my visit to see what the players have to say. And to see OU's players go out of their way without being asked to go and recruit some of these prospective athletes, I think that was another really cool kind of takeaway, in my opinion, from what the weekend was. The fact that so many of – who OU recruited once is now doing what they expected and recruiting the next wave of talent.
For sure. You know, just a superb weekend, a massive weekend. Just, you know, congrats to the program, to Brandon, to Maggie and Molly Jacoby, her first big weekend. I mean, it was a knock out of the park. I mean, right. I mean, a massive weekend. So fun stuff. Lots of coverage of all of it over on Sooners Illustrated. More to come. Obviously, Colin's all over it as this 27 class, which feels like a special one, continues to round into form. But yeah, big time stuff for Oklahoma over the weekend, without a doubt. We mentioned it. We did kind of unofficially kick off the spring yesterday. Want to touch on that stuff a little bit here in the back end. Obviously, we'll talk more about it over the next couple of weeks as we actually get into spring practices here, you know, in 2 weeks from tomorrow, the first practice, the 25th. I did want to first – I'll kind of open it up, Colin, as far as just anything that jumped out to you from anything. And it was a lot. We met all the new coaches, players. It was a lot. One specific thing I wanted to make sure to bring up off the top was that the Owen Heinicke saga may not be done just yet. Jim Nagy, who met with us yesterday, revealed that Oklahoma is still kind of pushing and in the mix to maybe do some more with Owen Heinicke. I want to make sure I get the actual quote. Here it is. Here's what Jim Nagy said. We're still working through some of that. We're not giving up. Yeah, Owen's a guy you want to fight for. We've got a locker room full of great men, young men, and Owen's incredible. So basically, you know, I think we had all kind of thought this was over. We kind of moved on, like Owen's going to go to the NFL and Oklahoma will have to just proceed without him. But Jim Nagy says otherwise. Not a whole lot of new ground to cover here, Colin, other than that they're still maybe going to try and take some legal action that could get Owen Heinicke that extra year. Obviously, for Oklahoma, it would be a huge deal, right? I mean, he's a good football player. You throw him in with Cole Sullivan and Kip Lewis and all that young talent. That linebacker room suddenly looks really good again, rather than, you know, having to lean on some unknown, you know, commodities quite as much if you had Heinicke back. So we'll keep an eye on it. Again, not like exactly a ton of new ground here, but just kind of interesting, right? That Jim Nagy revealed that, hey, we're still pushing. We haven't given up on Owen Heinicke being back at Oklahoma just yet, which is kind of crazy. This has been such a weird thing.
We've beaten this storyline to death.
Yeah.
And it it just sucks that the NCAA continues to let it be a thing. But all I really have to add is, look, what I think a lot of us have hoped to see or maybe even expected might be coming to fruition. And, like, if they do choose to take legal action, fasten your seatbelts, because I'll go into my own pocket to help cover the legal fees, if I'm honest with you, just to see it.
Set up a GoFundMe.
And I think the fans would do the same thing. I think a lot of media folks, too, like on the beat, because of the way that – I mean, I don't think it's any secret. Like, Owen Heineke deserves to keep playing. And so we're all in this guy's corner, no matter who – I mean, there are other fan bases that desperately want Owen Heineke to keep playing. Texas fans I've seen, I can't wait to see what comes from this. If they do end up taking the legal action, which is kind of some of the buzz behind the scenes, I'm all for it, man. Let's do it.
Fascinating stuff. And so we'll keep an eye on that, obviously, as it proceeds. But it's some interesting little news there from Jim Nagy that Owen Heineke maybe could still be back at Oklahoma next year. Kind of crazy, to say the least. Otherwise, I'll just kind of open it up. I mean, we're not going to be able to hit everything by any means. We're already obviously kind of going over. But, you know, it was awesome. It was awesome to get to talk to everyone. We got to meet all the new coaches. Jason Witten. Mm-hmm. Speaking for the first time in front of, you know, OU media with OU hat on. Still kind of almost felt like surreal. Like Jason Wynn is sitting here in an OU hoodie talking to us about Jack Van Dorsler, you know, or whatever. Just kind of crazy. We also met Dylan McCullough, and we met Lamar Morgan as well. Colin, you were talking to those guys at length yesterday. We met all the new players. We got to hear from Brent Venables. I mentioned Jim Nagy already. I mean, wide open, but what jumped out to you, if anything, whether it's a specific player, Brent, one of the coaches, I mean, take whatever direction you want. I wanted to just kind of make sure we at least acknowledge that we had it. And by the way, this is all on the YouTube channel, Brent, Nagy, the coaches. Hear from a lot of the players, not every single one, but a lot of them. It was like 40 players, so just from pure logistics, we weren't going to get them all. But we got a lot of them that are on the YouTube channel. And it jumped out to you at all? Any common thread from the coaches or players, Brent, Nagy, anything?
I'll say this. I think you kind of have to start with the headliners, which is the fact that we talked to the new assistant coaches.
Yeah.
Thought it was really cool talking to Lamar Morgan. He did not know Brent. He did not really know anybody here at Oklahoma. Yeah. But he talked about how much of his coaching career has been based around – finding health care for his children who have been at times in and out of hospitals. He tells this story much better than I ever could on our YouTube channel. So I encourage fans to go check that out. But Lamar Morgan talked about how getting to be closer to home and having the ability to go to a place like Oklahoma where there is a really good health care structure around him with OU Health and things of that nature, that was huge for both him and his wife. He actually mentioned that Brent called, this being Lamar Morgan, Brent called Lamar's wife to offer the job to them as a family, which he basically said that just doesn't happen, and it speaks to what the program is. And then Dylan McCullough was awesome. I mean, as expected, he was incredible. And I thought something really cool from him was he called some of OU's running backs whenever it was finalized he was going to get the job. He didn't say who. But he basically said that whoever he called, there were two of them on the phone, and one of them was just screaming with excitement whenever that player found out that he was getting a gig. And it sounds like these backs are already in on their guy being Dylan McCullough. Those two were awesome to talk to. And didn't know if you had anything that stood out from Jason Witten, but I enjoyed getting to know those guys even more.
Yeah, no, Jason Witten, that was where I kind of parked myself for the three coaches all went at one time, if that wasn't clear. So we were kind of were trying to move around. I was with Witten most of the time. And, yeah, he was great, as you expect. He was awesome. I mean, we knew it would be going in. You know, just him being very honest, I suggest people go watch it. It was one of the first couple of questions, you know, of just why? You know, I mean, you don't, you know, why do this? Because, obviously, Jason's an NFL Hall of Famer. He definitely doesn't, you know, need money. He almost certainly could be coaching in the NFL if he wants. He was coaching at high school, his son, you know, I mean, he was a top level player. I mean, he didn't have to do this, you know, so that was a main question of why are you, why now? And he was very open about that. And I would suggest you just go listen to what he had to say about it, because kind of like Colin said, he'll do better than I would. But it was very illuminating to hear from Jason. And that was really good. He was awesome. And him talking about his room and, just, you know, the reverence he has for Brent Venables and that connection. He talked about his relationship with DeMarco Murray, who we call one of his best friends, played a big role in this happening and him coming to OU. And so, yeah, really, really cool to hear from Jason Witten. And definitely, you know, he talked about Mike Vrabel and Dan Campbell as being guys he kind of looks at. And it's like, yeah, I can see that. This guy is going to be a head coach. That was something that pretty clear. I don't know how long it's going to take. Probably not super long. He will be a head coach, whether it's in college or the NFL. I feel pretty confident in that. And I know the guy hasn't coached a game in college yet, but you can just feel it, you know. And so he was great. I suggest – I got like 20 minutes with him on the YouTube, and I suggest you go watch it because it's good. I didn't plan to stay there that long, but it was good. So I just stuck. I had to wait for an opening for us, like kind of a repeat question, which always happens because people come and go. And I was like, all right, here's my opening. I gotta pull away at some point. And so but he was great. As far as Brent, Colin, I mean, I don't know if Brent – he had like a 20-plus minute opening statement. So he covered kind of everything and nothing at the same time in classic Brent Venables fashion. Good to hear from him, though. I mean, he touched on a few things. I mean, a little housekeeping things. Peach Adebore had foot surgery. Wasn't really clear on if it'll impact how long or whatever. That's obviously a big deal. People are expecting PJ to be a big part of this thing this year. Otherwise, with Brent, anything that stuck out to you from him? I thought what he said about Isaiah Satan and Kip Lewis was pretty good. Just being very open about, like, yeah, big deal, obviously, to get those guys back, and they want to help us win a national title. And he mentioned that Satania was maybe his favorite guy on the team last year, which I don't know if he had ever said that before. That was kind of interesting. An offensive guy. I mean, if you made him pick, you would think he would say Kip or, Robert Spears Jennings or somebody like that, or Mason Thomas, you know, one of his star defensive players. He says a wide receiver, which is not something you'd expect, but he was very kind of like, yeah, like didn't shy away from, yeah, huge deal to get these guys back. And it's credit to them for wanting to be back. But Brent Venables in a great mood. He went about 45 minutes as per usual for him. Anything jumped out from him?
Not a ton. I did think that was funny because, I mean, we knew how much everyone in the program loves Isaiah Satania. Like, he was a favorite.
Yeah,
he was
very well liked. Yeah.
From the beginning. But I also thought it was funny because my read initially was like, maybe he's saying this to mess with Kip a little bit, who he talks about, like, yeah, him and Kip, that relationship they have, and how Kip will make him laugh when he doesn't want to. So I didn't know if he was kind of jousting with Kip.
I kind of thought that a little bit too, because he said it with Kip multiple times where he talked about Kip on game day. He was like, game day, Kip is different, blah, blah, blah. It was almost like, I was like, maybe I'm reading way too into it. It was like, is he almost calling out Kip that he needs to like be a like more in practice, like give more in practice? Like, again, that might have been me reading way too into it. But Brent is very careful with his words on stuff.
Yeah.
So I wondered if he was like almost like not calling him out like in a, you know, but a little bit of like a challenging him to like, yeah, on game day, Kip is insane. He's awesome on game day. He's one of the, like, he said game day like 10 times, it felt like.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've always viewed it like, we know what Kip is like whenever we talk to him away from the game. He's very chill.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I get it. I didn't reach that level, but it's interesting. I'll say this. He mentioned, he talked about the number of returning starts in production coming back, how
a
decent amount of team from last year is returning, but at the same time, he was very open. He was like, we've got a lot out there to replace still, even though the retention piece and the additions are promising. Like, it has to be proven. And I thought that was really good for him, just running down very specifically. And you can see it on the YouTube channel, like, here's everything we've got back, here's what we think we've got. But at the same time, like, it's very evident in our building, we need to put it all together. And then I thought something else that really stood out to me that I had heard a little bit was, like, he basically said, this is kind of the time of year to get healthy. I think it's very realistic for Oklahoma to go into the spring being cautious with a lot of their top tier guys. And, like, for the record, that's what I'd be doing, right? Like, some of these guys, like a Jaden Jackson and a PJ, like, there are a lot of bumps and bruises in there. And he even said too, which was huge in my opinion, Josh, he was like, we took some of these guys out of the transfer portal who we knew had dents and stuff to recover from. So that was another big thing for me from Brent, who basically said, yeah, like, we're excited to get spring practices going, but we're also going to be really careful with how we handle some of these guys.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And, you know, Oklahoma is using a bit of a weird spring schedule, if you will. Weird, I mean, weird-ish, in that the spring game is not the end of camp. Because, you know, we looked at the calendar logistically, and we were like, this doesn't seem how it's going to add up. I mean, you're talking about March 25th, practice one, April 18th is a spring game. How are you going to get 15 practices in there? They're not. They are, from what I've, my understanding is that they're going to have a couple of practices after the spring game, which is a little different. You know, I mean, they're kind of spreading it out a little bit. So I might speak to kind of what you're saying. When you go back to the returning production thing too, did you enjoy when he basically said, like, we return all of our rushing yards, which we didn't have very many, but we do return them, which is, he's been very open about the run game needing to get a lot better. He's Brent is very honest about that sort of thing, and he's been putting that out there quite a bit. What about players? Anything player wise as well? I mean, we met a ton of guys. It's a lot to dive into. We met all the new transfers, again, with the exception of Peyton Joseph, who just had a class conflict. You know, it was great to hear from. We hit all the big ones, right? I went and talked to Colt Sullivan for a while. He was great, very open about the defense being complex and like it's going to take some time to, you know, figure it out, to learn it, basically. But he was very open about that. I thought he was good. I thought he was, you could tell why Brent likes him, you know, and he's a big fan of him. What about for you? Anybody you talked to that stuck out to you?
I mean, I really enjoyed getting to know some of these new tight ends, some of these freshmen that came in. Like, it was very cool to hear from a lot of the freshman class and hearing about their transition. You can already tell why a lot of these guys have established themselves very early on. Jack Van Dorsler kind of blew me away.
He was good. Yeah, I talked to him a little bit too. Yeah.
He's a younger guy, and I covered him as a recruit, but we talked about, and I'll probably write a story on this. We talked about Oklahoma had offered him when he was coming out of high school, and he just never really considered them all that much. And then to pivot this way, he gets some really good stuff to say. And the last thing for me is, like, I don't know if we want to touch the Parker Livingstone stuff with a 10-foot pole, but
yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I thought I'd bring it up. I mean, out of context, I mean, Parker Livingston, I think is how it's pronounced. I've been saying Stone, that's how it's spelled. I think it's Livingston. He basically, he was very open about the move to Texas, Oklahoma, and what that's been like and how hard that's been and the hate he's received and stuff like that. And he basically said, the quote out of context was that if I didn't have an agent, I'd still be in Austin, was basically what he said. Whereas a lot of people took that as like the agent messed it up for him and he wants to still be at Texas. That's not what he meant. You know, you have to kind of get the full scope of what he was saying. He was saying the exact opposite, in that his agent helped him realize like his value on the open market. And that's why, you know, he felt like he was worth more than he was getting, essentially, is what it boils down to. And that's why he ended up at Oklahoma. And, you know, Jim Nagy, he said as much in his, he talked about Parker Livingston. He said in his press conference that he did not expect Texas to, drop. He said, and that was great for us, you know. So that's a very interesting dynamic. That'll be a big storyline the week of the game, certainly. There's always a lot of emotion. You don't need to add anything to the OU Texas game. It's what it is. Everyone knows, you know, what all goes into that. But yeah, that the Livingston angle is very interesting. And just to hear him be so open about it, like, basically, I mean, again, reading between the lines, basically kind of like, yeah, Texas was kind of giving me a raw deal, and so I bounced, sort of a thing.
Yeah. Some of these media days we get across college football help remind some of us who really enjoy getting into the nitty gritty details of our sport, how some individuals are very simple-minded in their perception of what comes from this stuff.
Yeah.
That was frustrating to see, if I'm quite honest with you. There was a lot of stuff going on social media after what was an incredible spring media day, especially specifically around Parker Livingstone. I was just like, what are we talking about right now? But, yeah, man, it's just like, yeah, you know, he's basically saying that he would have taken a lowball offer from Texas because Texas is a program he admires. And he was advised to not take a lowball offer, which I think he deeply appreciates. It's that simply put, this is a non-story for me, but it was cool to see him finally not only talk, but I thought it was pretty profound too. Like, from the beginning, he was asked, can you describe what this process has been like? And you could tell how hesitant he was to talk about it and how it still is a little bit emotional for him to bring up. And I thought that was a great media day. That specifically was eye-opening, I guess you could say, from Parker.
For sure. And I caught up with a couple of the other high-profile transfers as well. Trell Harris for a little bit. He was great. Amarian Harris from Arkansas, who might be Oklahoma's right tackle. We'll see how that all shakes out. Both those guys, the common theme between those two, were very open about John Mateer being a big part of why they came to OU, which is interesting. A lot of the transfers said that, actually. Yeah. You know, he was – anytime you ask any of them about Mateer, they basically, you know, obviously hadn't played with him yet, the transfers, but they all kind of the same thing of, like, I wanted to come play with him. You know, so that was interesting to hear kind of just the way that – obviously, teammates, you expect it, because we know John and we know what kind of teammate he is. And it's not hard to see why guys would love to play with him. But for guys who have not really yet been his teammate, to say, like, from across the way, it just kind of goes to show you the way he's thought of in college football circles and among other locker rooms. You know, it's kind of was illuminating. I also had – well, another thing I had, too, was I asked Jonathan Hatton about just kind of playing right away as a freshman, if that was something he was kind of shooting for. And he was very open about, like – that's been a goal for a long time, to come and have an impact right away. And so I think that'll probably fire up OU fans a little bit, just to hear him say that, to be kind of open about, like, not running from the idea of, like, oh, I'm just here to do my thing. Like, he was open, like, I'm going to put in the work and I want to try and help us to win now. You know, I want to have a role now. So that's pretty cool. A couple of these freshmen, Colin, I'm going to tell you anything you don't know. You're around these guys all the time, are big dudes. I mean, DeZephin Walker.
Jaden Petit. I was not ready for that. Yeah. Jasir Rogers walked in. I was like, woof.
Petit certainly looked the part as well. Ryder Mix about broke my hand, shaking hands with him. I needed to know that going in.
Yeah. I didn't do a good enough job of preparing you for the Ryder Mix.
I was not ready. He was great. Experience. Tyler Ruxer was also great. Everyone was great. And I suggest everyone go check out the video. It's time stamped with the individual players. They're all on a big, long hour plus minute video, but it's time stamped, so you can find individual players. If you want to find someone specific, it's there. Great to get to meet the new guys. It was a lot, but we covered it, and we're on to the next thing. Spring ball starts in 2 weeks. First spring practice, 2 weeks from tomorrow. It's exciting. And Brent's usually pretty good about giving us, you know, a couple of practice windows, chance to get out and see. Sometimes we're out there for the first practice. Not every year. That kind of varies. But hopefully we get a chance to see this team pretty soon. It's exciting. Well,
Brent said he's speaking again next week too.
Yeah, right? I'll believe that when I see it. Next week is spring break next week.
Yeah.
Maybe he means in 2 weeks. But he did say that he would talk again soon, which last year he didn't. We only got him before and after, which, you know, it's like not the end of the world, but you would like to probably get him at least once in the middle of spring. And so we'll see if that happens this year. It's, again, not end of the world by any means, but we'll see. I think that's it. We went long, but we had a lot to talk about. Long show, but a packed show. We'll be back on Friday with Tom and myself. Thursday is pro day. We're not really sure what that's going to look like yet. I don't think Tom is going to Nashville, so I think he'll be there. We'll have pro day stuff. Hoops is out in Nashville in the SEC tournament right now. Baseball and softball are both about to start SEC play this weekend. So Tom and I will have plenty to get into with the other sports on Friday. We'll also talk some football as well with our spring primer series that will continue as well. So it'll be a packed show on Friday. We'll then circle back. Obviously, Selection Sunday is this Sunday for hoops. So we'll circle back next week on Monday. We'll wrap up the weekends that were, and we'll kind of dive into where things stand with men's and women's hoops with Selection Sunday in the rear view. Colin and I will circle back next week. I'm sure we'll have more recruiting stuff to talk about and whatever else is going on as we get ready for spring ball coming up in a couple of weeks. So we'll do all that next week. We'll talk with Tom on Friday, but that's it for now. Colin, safe travels out to Atlanta, and we'll keep up with you this weekend. More stuff for you. You're bouncing around, man. You're everywhere. Machine.
Yeah, doing what I can. Doing what I can.
All right. We'll talk to you on Friday. Tom Green and myself, Colin, I will circle back next week. That's it for now. We'll see you next time right back here, as always, on Sooners Illustrated.